From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the state of the State Department, a scary new trend, and churches have their day in court. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Reagan Republican, and Christ follower. As President Biden continues to undo a lot of successful Trump executive orders, last week he took aim at the State Department and their work abroad. Here's a clip of the president during a press conference at the State Department.
Reclaiming our credibility and moral authority, much of which has been lost. That's why we moved quickly to begin restoring American engagement internationally and earn back our leadership position, to catalyze global action on shared challenges. On day one, I signed the paperwork to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement. America must lead in the face of this existential threat.
So that's how we reclaim America's moral authority. We jump on this issue once again, picking up where the Obama administration left off on global warming. Well, joining me now to talk about this, about whether or not America actually left the global stage, as President Biden said in his speech, is the former Secretary of State, my good friend Mike Pompeo. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Tony, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Well, Mr. Former Secretary, let me just say thank you for the work that you did. You came on many times to talk about it. I have to think that you found some of the president's remarks shocking, as if he had been in a closet for the last 4 years.
You know, it's remarkable. And look, I'm happy to give him the benefit of the doubt for a bit here. But the world is not the world he described. And It's not okay to pick just the fantasy piece that you wish it were. You have to deal with the reality. And so when you hear him talk about things like the Paris Climate Accord, look, most of these countries have been in the Paris Climate Accords for these last 4 years. We left it under President Trump. Well, what did the world get for that? It got a Chinese Communist Party that continues to emit more pollution than any other country in the world, not even coming close to its commitments. These commitments are ephemeral. They're voluntary. No country is going to destroy its economy for the purpose of executing against the Paris Climate Accords. The United States shouldn't do that either. That's what President Trump frankly recognized. It's why we did good work. We actually had years where we reduced CO2 emissions in the United States at a higher rate than any other country, and we're proud of that. It was because of innovation, technology, economic improvement, incentive systems, all the things we know in America, Tony. That's the right approach. It's the American approach, and it's one that I hope that President Biden and his team will come to understand as well. I'm not maybe giving them too much of a benefit of the doubt, but, you know, they're just getting started, and I want to see how they do.
Well, I certainly wish him success, and I will be very candid. I prayed for you nearly every day, and I prayed for President Trump, and I'm praying for President Biden. Because
yes, sir, of course.
We're instructed to in Scripture, but also I want him to do well, because if he does well in terms of what's best for America, we all benefit. And so I do want him to make the right decisions, and I'm hoping that there will still be some good people around to give him good advice. I want to go back to a clip I played at the very beginning of the program, clip number one, because words have meaning, and this is going to require some interpretation because, let's just play the clip. Clip number one.
America is back. America is back. Diplomacy is back at the center of our foreign policy.
Biden said America is back. Did America go somewhere?
Tony, I don't know what he was referring to there precisely. Where we went was to lead from the front, not from the rear. It was a leadership, a foreign policy leadership that understood America first was the right approach. We got it right here in America. Good things would happen all across the world. And you can see the results of that. Right? Do you want to go back to the JCPOA? With Iran on the march and having more and more money and wealth, or do you like the fact that where we were was we made them poorer, weaker, less capable of fomenting terror around the world, protected our friend and ally Israel, the rightful homeland of the Jewish people? We built out relationships in the region, an enormous coalition of Gulf states and Israel, all of whom understood the threat from Iran. I don't want to go back to where we were 4.5 years ago. I don't think we want to go back to a policy where if the Chinese Communist Party said go left, we went left.
Right.
They said go right, we went right. We appeased them for an awfully long time. And President Trump didn't do that. Our team didn't do that. And Americans are safer and more secure as a result of that.
So this statement requires interpretation. What he probably meant was America is at the back, leading from behind like they did during the Obama administration.
It could be. You know, I saw today that they were going to rejoin the Human Rights Council at the United Nations. I mean, Tony, you know this institution. It is fundamentally anti-Semitic.
Yes.
It is fundamentally led by countries that have the worst human rights records anywhere in the world. We said, no, we're not going to participate in that. That's unreformable, is irredeemable, and we left. They've now gone back to that. I just think those things are an enormous mistake. I wish it was a real Human Rights Council, too, but you can't conduct foreign policy based on what you wish was happening. You have to accept facts and reality and deal with those.
Well, and America's foreign policy under the Trump administration was America first, which— You know, I don't think we need to make an apology for, and that maybe that's called nationalism, but I actually think it's good to be an American. That's why people want to come here. But there's such a contrast between priorities. You and I talked about this a number of times, Mike, when you were secretary, about the priority of international religious freedom. In fact, just today I had a commission meeting where I still serve as vice chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. But to contrast that with the priorities of this administration shows the difference of the consequences of election. I'm going to play another clip. Clip number three of what he talked about as the example America wants to set.
So with your help, the United States will again lead, not just by the example of our power, but the power of our example. That's why my administration has already taken the important step to live our domestic values at home, our democratic values at home. Within hours of taking office, I signed an executive order overturning the hateful, discriminatory Muslim ban, reversed the ban on transgender individuals serving in our military.
You know, he talks about this Muslim ban. That was protecting America from those coming to this country that were coming from countries that had a track record of attacking America.
Tony, we could dissect that for a long time. Indeed, what President Trump did was aim to keep Americans safe. And said, till it's the case that we can figure out who's coming in from these countries and that America can know that who's coming into our country from those places doesn't pose a threat to the American people, we're not going to permit that to happen again. This is fact-based, common-sense foreign policy. It makes enormous sense to open the floodgates when you don't have the systems and processes in place to keep the American people safe, to protect American jobs. All the things would go with a nation that is sovereign and free. If you get that wrong, Tony, there's no international system, there's no multilateral organization that can fix it.
I've got one more clip I want to play because you brought it up, fact-based, and you make these decisions based upon guiding principles of America first, what is best in our foreign policy. But apparently President Biden takes issue with how the previous administration approaches. Play clip number four.
We've restored our commitment to science and to create policies grounded in facts and evidence. I suspect Ben Franklin would approve.
We can have different opinions, but we're supposed to operate off the same facts.
Well, I think he's just misread fundamentally what it was that I was trying to do as a Secretary of State. I'll give you a good example from just the last couple days. No one disputes that the Houthi rebels in Yemen are terrorists, that they threaten America, that they shout death to Israel, that their motto convokes the very idea that the United States should not exist, that they've launched missiles into Saudi Arabia, that they kill civilians. These are terrorists. And to lift the designation of them as such is a fantasy. It is a wishing something weren't so. And that presents risk. It presents risk to the relationships in the Middle East. It presents risk to Israel. It presents risk to the people of the United States. Just need to have a set of foreign policies that they were elected to run on. I understand they're going to pick different ones than we did, and that indeed their priorities will be different.
Right.
But you have to ground it in history and facts and our nation's founding. And if you do that, then you're entitled to your own view of the right course of action.
But, Mr. Former Secretary, we live in such a volatile and dangerous world. You really don't get redos on some of these things. Because if we make America or our allies more vulnerable, you can't go back and undo that. Are there concerns that you have right now about the direction that that this administration is going that could create vulnerabilities for America?
Well, I hope they get it right, and I hope they honor. They said the right thing. I take them as people who are endeavoring to get it right to protect the American people. But if you allow the policies to go back into place, the ones that were in place under President Obama and Vice President Biden, with respect to China, with respect to Iran, with respect to our borders, all the things that the Trump administration did to keep the American people safe, you're in fact increasing risk for the American people. That has economic risk, it has risk to our health, as we've seen from this virus, all the things that the American people deserve when we raise our right hand to protect and defend the United States Constitution. I hope that this administration gets those right. I'm rooting for them.
Mike Pompeo, I know you have to go catch a flight. One final question for you. It is actually a question I asked you when we were meeting on January the 6th. We were in a meeting when all of the stuff happened at the Capitol, didn't find out until after we came out of that meeting. But I asked you, based upon your understanding of the world, having served as Secretary of State, CIA Director, Member of Congress, for our listeners all across America, mostly believers, what do we need to be praying about right now as we look out across the not only the landscape of America but around the world?
Well, Tony, as you said, we should all pray for our leaders across the world. But for America, we need to pray that people continue to do the things that have made this nation so special, right? We worked hard. We take care and raise our families. We involve ourselves in our communities, our religious communities, and our communities that do good projects and good works all across America. If America can restore those values, those traditional set of values, the central understandings that our founders had about this nation, we will continue to be the most exceptional nation in the history of civilization.
And we need to work toward that end. Mike Pompeo, as always, thanks so much for joining us. And again, appreciate your work as both Secretary of State, the Director of the CIA, and of course, as a member of Congress.
Tony, thank you, sir. So long.
You can find out more about Mike Pompeo when you visit TonyPerkins.com. And if you're wondering how Christians in America can successfully navigate the challenges ahead, it begins with remembering to pray, stand, and not lose heart. Earlier this week, Pastor Gary Hamrick and Dr. Mike Ferris joined Tony for a Pray, Vote, Stand town hall to discuss the way forward for America. If you missed this important conversation, don't worry. You can still watch the broadcast over at PrayVoteStand.org.
Every Wednesday, FRC and FRC Action President Tony Perkins hosts the Pray, Vote, Stand broadcast to equip you to pray, vote, and stand for biblical truth. This weekly half-hour program features experts, elected leaders, and Christian leaders who help you see through the fog that's being created by the biased lenses of the mainstream media. To watch the broadcasts, visit PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday of this week, Tony Perkins had a chance to talk with author Abigail Schreier about a disturbing trend where girls with no gender dysphoria are seeking out transgender treatments. Here's Tony Perkins as he gets things started.
Abigail, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
So what is Planned Parenthood doing?
So, you know, the truth is I really wish they were helping. What they're providing is teen girls, you know, age depends on states. In some states like Oregon, you can go in at 15 to a Planned Parenthood clinic. And without parental permission, without so much as a therapist note, you walk in, you get a course of testosterone that day, and very often having never seen a doctor.
I mean, just go in and say, I'm transgender, I need treatment, and they just give it to them?
Well, there's typically a one-hour intake interview, but, you know, I talked to one whistleblower from I've talked to many adolescents who've, you know, received testosterone from Planned Parenthood, but this was the first time I was able to talk to a whistleblower. And what she would describe is an atmosphere in which the nurses and reproductive health assistants who they have manning these clinics, you know, are looking at each other, knowing something very strange is going on, that these girls, sometimes they have scars from self-harm. Some of these cuts are fresh. They know these girls are very vulnerable, very troubled, and yet they're, you know, coming in with their girlfriends as a group and walking out that day with testosterone.
So what do you think is driving this?
Well, you know, the drugs are extremely pricey. And of course, if you start, unlike abortion, as the, you know, whistleblower I talked to pointed out, you know, you become a lifetime patient when you start on them. So it's a lot of repeat visits to Planned Parenthood to check on your blood work and do follow-ups. That's not what abortion is. Abortion is typically a one-time visit. And so there's no question this is a very lucrative enterprise in a time when, frankly, abortion rates are very down in America. They're lower than they've been at any time since 1973 when Roe v. Wade was decided.
So Planned Parenthood adjusting their business model so they can continue to rake in profits.
I would imagine. I mean, it's certainly been successful for them. In just 5 years, they've gone from 26 clinics that provide testosterone to 210 clinics providing this service.
Well, that gets to the underlying issue that you've talked about before, as what is fueling this transgender movement across the country.
Well, we know there's peer influence. I mean, one of the reasons that, you know, I chose to write up this interview I did with this whistleblower is because she told me something I had not heard before and I actually did not and didn't realize when I wrote my book, which was that there were literally groups of girls coming in to Planned Parenthood clinics with their friends, giggling in the waiting room. That's not what traditional gender dysphoria looks like. It's a real ailment. It's excruciating based on the people I've talked to. The adults who decide to transition, transgender adults who are lovely people, I know many at this point, and they do it because that's how they feel most comfortable. That is not what these girls are doing. They are with, as teenagers, deciding out of the blue, encouraged by a lot of peer influence. These are very vulnerable girls, and because of social media influence and peer influence, they've decided that their problem is gender, and this is a quick and easy solution.
Well, I want to transition to the policy aspect of this, because I think clearly you've documented and I've read your stuff on how the social media is fueling this, but policies could as well. I've got a clip here earlier this week. The White House press secretary was asked about one of the executive orders regarding transgenders. And let's play this clip.
I would just say that the president's belief is that trans rights are human rights, and that's why he signed that executive order. And in terms of the determinations by universities and colleges, I would certainly defer to them.
This was about the
slippery,
this forcing educational institutions to allow men who claim to be women to participate in women's sports, use the restrooms, the locker rooms, the showers, and so forth. I mean, You have to acknowledge, and I'm not saying that to you. I'm just saying, generally speaking, you have to acknowledge that public policy is driving part of this as well.
That's interesting. I think that's probably right. I tend to look at the culture rather than the policy, and I would just say, because I approach this as a journalist. I investigate the phenomenon. I don't have any public policy prescriptions, but I will say this, that, you know, girls are looking across the culture and they're seeing that the culture has turned their backs on them. They've seen mm-hmm. that boys are now in their, men are in their locker rooms. This has happened. They are seeing that boys are allowed to choose that, you know, pick off the top spots and the top scholarships in their sports. They know it doesn't look great today to be a woman. And, you know, they're choosing something else.
That's sad because a country doesn't have, a culture doesn't have a bright future if that's the way young women are seeing themselves.
I think that's right. I think it's really tough to be a young woman today. I don't think that they're getting almost no support from feminists in this country, who have heard that, you know, from the Biden administration, that she turns around and recites mantras, trans women are right. women, this kind of stuff, right. in response to a very specific question about what's going to happen to the girls' school sports.
Yeah. Sad. Abigail Schreier, thanks so much for joining us. I'll have your article posted at our website. I encourage people to take a look at it.
You can find out more about Abigail Schreier when you visit tonyperkins.com. And don't forget to check out our video from last week's Pray Vote Stand Town Hall over at prayvotestand.org.
Attention university students. Are you looking to be equipped as a Christian leader and to influence the culture from a biblical worldview? Join us at Family Research Council for our internship program. With a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training, you will grow personally and professionally. This paid 12 to 15 week program is designed to give you real world experience and to prepare you for wherever God calls you. Apply today at frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. With most of the news outlets covering the impeachment hearings this week, you may not have heard about the Supreme Court's decision regarding California's crackdown on churches. Last October, we were in Chino Hills, California, for a Freedom Sunday event, and Pastor Che An from Harvest Rock Church in Pasadena, California, shared his experience.
A month ago, I received a letter from our city prosecutor saying that if we continue to meet, I would be arrested, put in jail for 1 year, and then our church members would be fined up to $1,000 per person. And then finally, they said, we also have the right to arrest your church members. Now, this is kind of crazy because we're not in communist China. We're not in the former Soviet Union. We're in the United States of America.
Well, on Friday night, by a vote of 6-3, Pastor Che An of Harvest Rock Church in Pasadena, California, got some good news, and he joins us now to talk about it. Pastor Che An, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, you got some good news after fighting yes. many months against the heavy-handedness of the California authorities. The Supreme Court said you have a right to meet inside.
Absolutely. To give you an idea how extreme California has been, 49 states have opened up church services, in-person service, some states with limitation, 33 states with no limitation whatsoever. And if it wasn't for the lawsuit winning it with the Supreme Court 6-3 decision, we would still be locked down today. But back in July, when they were just commending all the protesters who were not socially distancing, shouting and protesting, Governor Newsom said your First Amendment rights must be protected. We understand that you will be protected by the government. And yet they locked down the church, and then I get a letter 1 month later saying that they're going to arrest me just for worshiping Jesus. We're talking about even having the right to arrest church members who are law-abiding, tax-paying people who don't even have a record, and they just want to worship in obedience to Scripture. Hebrews 10:25, do not forsake the assembling of the saints. And so that's how extreme California has been. And so we sued Governor Newsom. And unfortunately, we lost in the district court and the Ninth Circuit. But I want to thank the Supreme Court. And of course, I want to give glory and praise to Jesus, because ultimately, he's the one who moved on our behalf. And even John Roberts, who's been voting liberal in the past, sided with us and gave us a 6-3 decision that our constitutional rights were violated. and the ban has now been lifted. And so the good news is not just for us, really, it's for the body of Christ, and not just in California, it's for the whole United States, and I believe in perpetuity, because who knows, next year there could be another virus, and other states could start locking down. And from the very beginning, they deemed abortion clinics essential, marijuana dispensaries essential, liquor stores essential, but the church was not essential. And we wrote a letter to the governor saying that, with all due respect, the church has been essential for the past 2,000 years. We are the salt of the earth, the light of the world, and we will continue to be essential. And so, but now we believe that we've won a case that has established a precedence for future rulings as well.
I think you're absolutely right. And Pastor Cheon, I want to commend you and your fellowship, Harvest Rock, for taking on this this fight for religious freedom and taking it all the way to the Supreme Court. I know it wasn't easy, but I have to imagine that Sunday was or yesterday was quite a special celebration as you all gathered to worship the Lord.
Well, you know, we try to mitigate with a size even, but it was packed. The place was full. People were so excited and were so grateful. And again, I want to thank Matt Staver and Liberty Council. They did a magnificent job, and truly godly leader, Matt Staver, and he really heard from the Lord. Now, we're not done yet. The reality is that he still imposed a size limitation, and they are still debating about singing. And they wanted to come back and to give back to this Ninth Circuit, that is, and to give our arguments why we should sing and why there should be no limitation. So we're really going for everything. We want total freedom to worship God in spirit and in truth. And if we lose in the Ninth Circuit, we're back before the Supreme Court again. But the big picture, the big thing is that there's no more lockdown for in-person worship, and that's the big victory we want.
Well, it is, but we need to get the whole victory. So thank you for staying in the fight, and we will continue to track this as you make your way back through the court once again. Pastor Cheon, thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations, and again, our appreciation for you standing.
And Tony, if your people could pray for us, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, encouraging you to pray for our nation. I want to thank you for being with us, and I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.